From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. The William Warfield Scholarship Fund has a two-pronged mission: to support deserving vocal students at the Eastman School of Music and to preserve the legacy of the great singer William Warfield. Today on Backstage Pass, we'll do both, with scholarship recipient Jonathan Rhodes and friends, and with the William Warfield Scholarship Fund historian Thomas Warfield. Great voices in word and deed, next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. This Sunday is the annual William Warfield Scholarship Fund concert, and we are celebrating that and more today on Classical 91.5. I'd like you to meet our guests today who are here to sing and chat with us. We have the mezzo-soprano, Alexis Peart. Hello, Alexis.
Hello.
And sitting next to you, soprano Jasmine Saunders.
Hello.
We have, on the other side of Alexis, Marcus Jefferson, the tenor.
Hello.
And another tenor in our midst, Jonathan Rhodes.
Hello.
The current recipient of the William Warfield Scholarship and the historian of the William Warfield Scholarship Fund, Thomas Warfield. Thomas, welcome.
Hi, Julia.
Your very first Backstage Pass. What took us so long to get you here?
It took a long time.
Let's start, actually, with the concert and with the William Warfield Scholarship Fund. What is the history first behind the concert, Thomas?
Well, you know, these concerts actually began as sort of a holiday concert back in, they were held in December during the time when my uncle would come back home to Rochester for Christmas. And they were kind of a celebration of the holidays and people having an opportunity to see him and meet him and hear him sing. And it was a lot of the audience would sing carols. He would get the audience singing carols. And it was a little more flexible, I might say, back then. And then eventually, they became more of a showcase for the scholarship recipient and giving the sort of the community an opportunity to hear the recipient and learn more about the scholarship fund. And so they were moved to January, that's where they've been ever since. And they are a fundraiser, too, by the way.
Of course. Yeah. Now, the William Warfield Scholarship Fund began while your uncle was still alive or after he passed?
Yeah, so it began in 1977. And, I'll tell you a short, I'll try to tell you a short story about how it began. So it was started by Tessa Martin, who was at that time a Rochester resident, but she had been originally from Athens, Greece. And back in the 50s, I believe it was 1952, she heard a concert in Athens of William Warfield and Leontine Price, who had just been married, actually. And that was actually the only concert they ever did together ever. And she was so taken by this baritone who sang these songs, Negro spirituals, which she hadn't any idea what they were. And she was just mesmerized by these songs. So anyway, fast forward to the early 70s, where she married an architect who lived in Webster, New York, and moved to Webster, New York. And her son, William, went to Harley School. And in his first grade class was a boy named Tommy Warfield. And Bill and I became good friends. And one day she asked my mom if she had ever heard of a man named William Warfield. And of course, my mother said, that's my brother-in-law. And fast forward a little bit later, she decided that what was really needed in this town was some way to honor William Warfield. And when William Warfield was a student in high school here in Rochester at Washington High, he won a contest, a singing contest. And then he went on to win the state version of that contest, and which meant he could go on to sing in the national contest, but he didn't have the money to go to St. Louis where it was held. And so his school, the students in his school raised money to send him to this this competition, and he won it. And the award was a scholarship to any music school in the country. And of course, he chose his own Rochester school, Eastman School of Music. And so that's, in a way, the concept of the scholarship is a similar thing. The community kind of helps us to help someone. So that's what we do.
The concert is on Sunday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in Kilbourne Hall. And I thought that we might first listen to the actual recipient for the second year of the William Warfield Scholarship. His name is Jonathan Rhodes, and we'll meet Jonathan right after he sings us two pieces of music, beginning with a work by Andre Caplet. His pianist is Andrew Chen, and this is Backstage Pass.
La lumière plus pure des flèches plus douces, la voix qui passe à porte de roses lointaines, les pavés sous nos pieds deviennent de la mousse, nous inspirons l'odeur des herbes et des fontaines. Nicht, und wenn das Herz auch bricht, ewig verlorenes Lieb, ewig verlorenes Lieb, ich grahle nicht, ich grahle nicht, wie du auch strahlst in Diamantenpracht. Es fällt kein Strahl in deines Herzens Nacht, das weiß ich längst. Ich strahle nicht, und wenn das Herz auch bricht, ich sah
dich ja im Traume und sah die Nacht in deines Herzens Rahme und sah die Schlange, die dir am Herzen frisst. Ich sah mein Lieb, wie sehr du elend bist. Ich grolle nicht, ich grolle nicht.
Ich grolle nicht, written by Robert Schumann and sung by Jonathan Rhodes, the pianist Andrew Chen, before that André Caplet, In una selva oscura. This is Backstage Pass, and we're celebrating William Warfield and the William Warfield Scholarship Fund. The scholarship holder is Jonathan Rhodes. Jonathan, William Warfield told me many years back when I interviewed him that he is a black classical music musician, didn't have a lot of problems growing up or stepping into the world of classical music. Have you found that to be your experience?
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things about being an African-American musician in general is that, at least with classical music, we aren't really oftentimes exposed to it. And exposure is what allows you to see, do you have an act? Do you have a desire? Do you find pleasure in performing classical music? And it was pure chance that I even came into classical music this way. I was fortunate enough to do a talent show in elementary school, and someone liked the way I sang. So I thought maybe I should join a choir in middle school. And so I joined my choir my first year in middle school, and my choir teacher's daughter came in to sing for us, and she was an opera singer. She trained classically. And from there, it kind of sparked this niche inside of me that wanted to pursue this thing. But had I not had that teacher who had that daughter who sung classical music, I probably wouldn't have been able to pursue it, because when I grew up, there was no real exposure to it. And I think that's one of the hardest things about growing up in this world, because we don't really have the kind of background in it. And we have to sort of find our way through this dark, trying to find our way through this field.
So how do we create a situation where we can have more people hearing classical music? How do you create that portal for other African-American kids in Rochester and beyond?
Yeah, I think it's got to begin with exposure. We have to at least show people what's out there. A lot of times, whether it's opera or just general classical music or orchestra or anything, you have to get that foot in the door. You have to let kids know that this avenue exists. And that is how we keep the art form alive in general.
You are the winner of the William Warfield Scholarship Fund. What did you have to do to win that? Twice.
The details aren't exactly as clear to me as one might think, but I know there are a couple things that did help. My freshman year, I was one of the recipients of the Freshman Jury Award, which at Eastman is like an award that they give to people who perform well on their freshman year jury, and typically well during the year as well. And I think I also showed my growth and development my freshman year, because I came in with so many issues. But I think going in head first and listening to your teachers most of all, and just going through the motions and doing the program and showing them that you have what it takes and that you want to do this and a desire to do this. And I think that is what gives them an idea of who is available, at least for the scholarship award.
Your teacher is Anthony Dean Griffey. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows who he is, right? Did you choose him? Did he choose you?
This is a funny story that I'm not sure I should be telling. But I had first selected Robert Swenson to be my teacher when I wrote down my preferences in teachers. But my mother, bless her heart, who doesn't know as much about music, she decided that Anthony Dean Griffey was the way to go because he, on paper, had 4 Grammy Awards and did not tell me until 3 months in. But happily, 2.5 years later, I'm very glad that she made that decision for me because he is the best teacher for me.
You know, and that is matching the teacher to the voice is really important. We do have a Robert Swenson student in this room, so Professor Swenson can feel not slighted by the fact that you went with Anthony Dean Griffey. This is Backstage Pass, and we have next here on Backstage Pass, Jasmine Saunders. She comes from Rochester, New York, and we'll be talking to her a little bit later on. And she'll be singing an aria by Handel with the piece As the Dove Laments Her Love.
Thank you.
Jasmine Saunders, the soprano, with Andrew Chen, the pianist, singing Handel's As the Dove Laments Her Love from Achis and Galatea. This is Classical 91.5, and this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres, and we're talking to some wonderful, wonderful singers from the Eastman School of Music, including a senior, Marcus Jefferson. How's your time at the Eastman been?
You know, it's been a journey. Definitely, I came in with a lot, with not as much as I'm leaving with. Very. I think I've gained a lot as a person, as a musician. Obviously, I think I've received probably the best training that I would have gotten in choosing music schools.
What music schools did you have to choose from?
Well, that's also a funny story, because I wasn't always going to pursue music. I applied to some different schools. So I applied, the only music schools I applied to were Eastman and then Northwestern. And everything, it worked out that I was coming to Eastman. But I also, I also applied to like University of Pittsburgh and, you know, just to keep my options open, because I was sure what I wanted to do, but my parents weren't as sure. So I think more for their sake, I decided to apply to other fields.
What tipped it for you?
I think, you know, when I came here for my audition and I walked into Lowry Hall, there I just had this feeling that I was going to end up here. And I did, so, yeah.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah, it has that effect on people.
Yeah, they walk in a lot and they just say, "This, I have to be here." Mm-hmm. It's something that seems to emanate from the walls and the floors and the light. I don't know. Like, your teachers are?
I study with Jan Oblak currently.
And before that, you had Ruth Hennessy.
Yes, she was here. She's here this year, but she was here last year filling in for Professor Oblak.
And how has that been? Has it been a good match?
I think so. I think as I'm coming into my voice and who I am, I'm not sure if I would continue to study with him, but what he's done with me so far has been probably the greatest, I think, I've ever had in terms of teachers and people using my voice and working with me.
You have, obviously, at this point, you're a senior, so you're going to have to be making plans pretty
yes.
soon. One of the things that I noticed was that you're thinking about musicology research on race in the voice. Please talk yes. to me about that.
Yes.
Marcus.
So in my history class last semester, I actually wrote a research paper on Black feminism and race and the voice and racializing voice. And there are some scholars out there that talk about this. Nina Edsheim is one of them. I was reading some of her papers on this. And this is a topic that I kind of related to because when I was, I mean, I grew up in a very white community. And, you know, I was kind of like the token Black kid or whatever, and they would always say, well, you don't sound like you're Black. And then I would say, well, what would you expect me to sound like? And that kind of usually got rid of any other questions. But just the fact that they're looking at who I am as a person just plainly physically and expecting me to sound a certain way or to do some things a certain way. And it's just kind of, I mean, growing up, you get used to it, but it's something that I shouldn't have to get used to. It's, I think we can raise level of expectations, I think, on society.
So what was your entry point into classical music, Marcus?
So I actually took voice lessons when I was in elementary school, and then I stopped singing completely because my voice started to change and I was just not comfortable with singing. But I started singing again in high school when I joined choir, and I was in my high school select choir. And my choir teacher, her husband, was actually a chorister in the Metropolitan Opera. And so I started taking voice lessons from him. And that's kind of how I got onto this track and went from there.
You know, people think singing is like playing the piano, that, you know, you've got this awesome five-year-old ripping through, you know, Scriabin preludes at five. Mm. And then
can just continue to grow. But a voice doesn't work that way. You can really mess your voice up pretty sincerely mm-hmm. if you work too hard too quickly, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us as classical singers, the road is longer. And it's literally just a physical thing. It's like your body isn't ready to be singing the type of music that you're training to sing. And that's why we take all this time and preparation to do what we do.
This is Backstage Pass, and we've been talking to Marcus Jefferson from the Eastman School of Music Senior. We listen to music again now. This time, we'll be hearing from a mezzo-soprano, Alexis Peart. Her pianist is Nathan Chung, and she'll be singing Perfect As We Are from Mark Adamo's Little Women.
The Curse of the Coventrys, a thrilling romance, draft two. Gondola after gondola, yes. Brilliant throng, marble staircase. But wait, masked avenger, not my child, cried she. The count in a perfect, perfect madness. No, mania, no. The count in a perfect, perfect. Look at us, Laurie, we're perfect as we are, perfect as we are, truly perfect as we are. See how we adore each other.
Before an oaken door.
joys, he knows the voice, his luckless lady's cries. Save me, save me! He sprang forth to collect her. Here, my lady, here! But no, no, groaned the spectre, and weighed before his eyes tears, of course there are quarrels. Today it smiles, tomorrow snarls. There are days on end we drift apart, each of us doing, perfecting, pursuing her art.
From Little Women by Mark Adamo, that's Perfect As We Are, sung by Alexis Peart with the pianist Nathan Chung. This is Backstage Pass, and this is Jasmine Saunders. Jasmine is a freshman of first year at the Eastman School of Music, and you're from Rochester, New York,
yes,
Jasmine.
Yeah.
So, Jasmine, I have in my little classical world here this idea of where the Eastman School of Music looms. But what was it like growing up in Rochester with the Eastman School of Music?
Yeah, so growing up as especially a high school musician in Rochester, I had a lot of opportunities to perform at Eastman, whether it was for my all-state choirs or even in the Nutcracker Ballet. I used to do that as well. And so by being able to have those opportunities, Eastman kind of became home to me. And so I never really thought that I would end up here for college, but since I just have grown so comfortable at Eastman performing there for so long, I just knew that this was the place where I should be.
I assume you applied elsewhere.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I did.
So are you going to reveal or just let it go?
Well, I applied to Potsdam Crane. I also applied to Manhattan School of Music and Carnegie Mellon and Fredonia and local places just to keep my options open.
I mentioned that somebody in this room was studying with Robert Swenson. That would be you.
Yeah.
So what is that like as a woman studying with a male vocal teacher?
Yeah, so I in high school, I actually studied with a male vocal teacher as well. So it wasn't really that much of a new experience for me. When I was going into college, I always thought that maybe having a female teacher would be more beneficial for me. But as I got to go to sample lessons and try out different teachers, I found that Professor Swenson was the right match for me.
Why do you like him?
I chose him particularly because when I was meeting him, it just felt like he not only cared about me as a musician and a student, but as a human being as well. And it just seemed like he was eager to know more about me as a human being.
So why classical music for you, Jasmine?
Well, I have been in the music type of thing since I was about 3 years old. That's when I took my very first music class over at the Hochstein School of Music. So I guess it was just destined that I would go into classical music. I started getting into musical theater at about age 6. And then in elementary school, I was in choir. And then I started clarinet in 4th grade. So that's kind of when I first got my initiation into the classical world. And then about 6th grade, when I went to a new school, I just I joined choir, and I just really enjoyed classical music. It was just what I love to do. And by 9th grade, I started studying privately. And yeah,
your classmates think you're a geek.
Yeah.
Couldn't understand it at all. So saying that your peers in high school and junior high school had no clue what this classical music thing was, how did you sell it to them? How did you explain to them why classical music was important to you and maybe should be to them as well?
Yeah, well, actually in high school, there were quite a bit of people who studied privately, and we would have like voice recitals and things like that. But I was one of the more serious people. Like, I was preparing to go into music college while other people were like treating classical music as more of a hobby. And so I think that as I sing, people just saw that extra passion in me and that extra drive. And that's how they kind of knew that, you know, classical music is important to me and it's important to my career path. And
so talk about your career path very briefly. What is it? Where do you want to end up?
Right now, I would really like to pursue a full performance career. That's kind of what I'm going for right now. But of course, I'm open to wherever life takes me and whatever God's will is for my life.
I know that this is one of the first performance opportunities you've had in your first year for the Eastman School of Music. So we are honored that you could have it here on Backstage Pass. Thank you for being with
us. Thank you for having me.
We have coming up next on Backstage Pass is we celebrate the William Warfield Scholarship Fund. The man that we've been talking to, and now we will hear him sing, Marcus Jefferson, will be joined by pianist Andrew Chen for two songs, beginning with Charles Fontaine Manny's Were You There?
Were you there when they crucified me?
That was the song Grief by William Grant Still, the Dean of African American Composers. Before that, Charles Fontaine Manny's Were You There? Two more great African American composers will be represented coming up on Backstage Pass, where we celebrate the William Warfield Scholarship Fund. The William Warfield Scholarship Fund concert is coming up on Sunday at 4 o'clock in Kilburn Hall. And last but far from least, we talked to Alexis Peart. Alexis loved that song. That was great.
Thank you.
You actually did cover for Little Women, yes?
Yeah. Last summer, I had the chance to perform the opera in Hawaii. And I played Alma March, who was the mother, and then I covered Meg, who was one of the sisters. And this is actually Joe's aria, so I'm kind of all over the Little Women spectrum.
Yeah, you have the whole family.
Yeah.
You're taking care of everybody. Hawaii must have been rough, huh?
Pardon?
Must have been rough in Hawaii.
I mean, it was lovely. It was really an incredible opportunity. And then to have Mark Adamo, the composer, come down to coach us on all this like incredible music was beyond belief. It was incredible.
And you've gotten to work in Italy as well?
I did, yeah. The summer before that, I went with my teacher, Catherine Jasinski, to a program that she works with in Italy, where I got to do some opera scenes and sing in a bunch of really beautiful and old churches, which is amazing.
Catherine Jasinski, known as the Urban Mezzo. She must be a spectacular teacher.
Oh, she's incredible. She just has such a strong understanding of the way the voice works. And to have her also be a mezzo, we just have that like connection and understanding. You know, because I feel like no matter how much you learn about the voice, you will never quite know the voice in general as well as you know your own. So to be able to relate to someone who has that same voice part is like a different kind of connection.
Yeah, mezzo strong, right?
Yes.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Titusville, New Jersey, which is about half an hour outside of Princeton.
What was it like in Titusville, New Jersey?
It was kind of small, very small town, very predominantly white community. But I mean, they had a lot of great opportunities, you know, at my high school and stuff like that. I was in a lot of choirs. I got to perform a lot of solo work. And we were so close to the Westminster Conservatory and Westminster Choir College. So when I like was growing up, I took a lot of music lessons there and got to kind of develop my love and passion for music through that program.
As singers these days really have to do more than just classical music. I mean, don't you find yourself in a place where you have to think about musicals and other kind of singing other than just holding forth and doing an aria. I mean, I'm watching you, and you are performing, and you are acting. There's a lot more that you have to do these days walking out into the world.
Yeah, because, I mean, fortunately, we're in a time when there are so many, like, a wealth of talented singers. And in order to distinguish yourself from that crowd, you need to have something else, something that makes you special, like that sparkle. And especially when, like, people are tending to focus more on the dramatic aspects of opera theater and, like, musical theater and pretty much any performing arts, you want to see that emotion, that connection, that drama. And as a performer, you need to have that in your toolbox of sorts of things that you can call upon to really convey your message to an audience.
So, Alexis, what are you thinking as you are, you're in your third year?
Yes.
So at this point, plans are being made. What are your plans?
Well, I am actually a double major with voice performance and music education. So I'll be finishing up my 4 years and then doing a ninth semester to student teach. And then probably like hanging out in Rochester for another semester and taking lessons with Professor Chuzinski, and then eventually going to go get my master's in opera performance.
So end up teacher or performer or C, both of the above?
Probably both of the above. I don't know. I feel like learning how to teach and working with students has made me much a stronger artist, you know, because it's one thing to be able to do it yourself, and then another thing to be able to put it into words, to have someone else also do that. And that kind of has made me reflect on the way that I work through music, the way that I process things. And it makes it more clear for myself. So probably like a combination of both performing and teaching, because I mean, they kind of go hand in hand.
See, I always thought that choral teachers had the coolest job in the world, because you could pick this great music and then bring together all these voices and create this massive beauty. It just strikes me as a very cool thing to do. But that being said, music in the schools has been pretty dicey these days.
Yeah. I mean, music has such an important part to development and the way that people can kind of interpret the world around them. And overall, I think it's really important that we kind of bring education into the schools with performance and showing students, like, this is what music is. This is what classical music is. And, you know, like my colleagues have said, that makes such an impact to have someone in your life kind of show you, like, this is what opera is all about.
We're going to hear what spirituals are all about now on Backstage Pass. We actually have two. One of the great begins the set as Marcus Jefferson and Jonathan Rhodes joined together for Harry T. Burley's Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child on Backstage Pass.
Oh.
Moses Hogan's Hear My Prayer, sung by Alexis Peart, Jasmine Saunders, Marcus Jefferson, and Jonathan Rhodes. And before that, Jonathan and Marcus, with Harry T. Burley's Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child. This is Backstage Pass, and we are celebrating the William Warfield Scholarship Fund, which has a concert coming up on Sunday. WilliamWarfield.org is the place to get more information. Thomas Warfield, in her book, Becoming Me, or Becoming, by Michelle Obama, she says that when she got to Princeton, she said it was like stepping on stage at your first piano recital and realizing that you'd never played anything but an instrument with broken keys. Your world shifts, but you're asked to adjust and overcome to play your music the same as everyone else. This is doable, of course. Minority and underprivileged students rise to the challenge all the time, but it takes energy. How does that path get made smoother?
Well, it gets made smoother by people going before you and smoothing it out. And I think when I listen to these young people not only sing but speak, I'm reminded that that part is very important, that their journey carves a path for someone coming after them. And it helps to smooth that path. Certainly, it's not going to be totally smooth, but it will be smoother because they were there, because they sang, because they worked, because they fulfilled some desire and some dream in themselves. And that is sort of an allowing of the people who come after you to do the same thing.
I want to thank you all for being here to perform and to talk with us. Thomas, thank you for being here as well. Our executive producer is Gene Fisher. Our audio technicians are Andrew Croucher and Robert Brayton. With thanks to Jonathan Rhodes, Jasmine Saunders, Alexis Peart, Marcus Jefferson, and of course, Thomas Warfield, and our accompanists, Andrew Chen and Nathan Chung. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.